Yes, we are backstage with soloist Don Liuzzi and composer Morris Wright. Bravo and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's pretty exciting and novel to have a timpani concerto.
Yeah, there's not many out there. I can actually count on two hands. There's about 10 or 11 that I know of. And this is the 11th.
And it did look like an exhausting athletic performance, actually.
Yeah, there's six drums that I'm surrounded by and a little rototom. And it does, I fortunately have a seat that swivels, so it assists my getting around a little bit. Although I have lost 10 pounds in the last few weeks. So.
Well, how did this concerto come to be? Morris?
Well, Don and I have known each other a long time. And over the course of the years, he's played almost everything that I've written. And after each performance, we would talk about what another interesting thing would be to try to do. And so I forget which of us thought of it, but there was a notion that a timpani concerto would be an interesting project. And this goes back some years. And I've been thought about it for a very long time and spent some time looking at what I thought that would entail. In other words, what would it be like to listen to drums for 20 minutes or more than 20 minutes? And so the idea was that the form had to be full of contrast, that the three movements had not only to sound different tempos, but to try to accomplish totally different things. And so I worked on that, and then I started composing the piece, and I asked Don, well, should I think about how the range of this drum or the range of that drum? And he really got tired of that very quickly. He said, just write a piece, and then we'll worry about it later, about how to play it. And I don't know if he regrets that or not.
No, I didn't. I think actually it was the right way to go, because as a timpanist, you have to map out your tuning scheme, because there's different pitches. Every drum has a range. And so it just, like any composition, you work out your tuning scheme after it's written, and when you see it. So that's what happened. And there was very few changes, right? Just a couple of little, one or two moments were a little too unplayable. So.
Well, for a little bit of background, for people who have never seen timpani up close, they're kettle drums.
Yeah, it's a copper bowl, either round or semi-flat shape, and they're different sizes. There's a 32-inch, a 29, a 26, 24, 23, and then a piccolo 20-inch drum. We're even using a little rototom, which is actually not really a timpani. It's a rotational drum that changes pitches. There's one spot where I only have 2 feet, so I had to add a little tom-tom to kind of play the passage that he wrote, because it was a really important kind of jazzy flat third that I didn't want to miss. So you do your tuning scheme based upon those drums, and you know the ranges, and you figure out. So you're writing in the music, not only when to tune, when to move your feet between the six drums.
And your feet adjust the tension on
the
top.
The pedals that I have are changing the tension, changing the pitch.
So what is the range total?
Well, this is where we probably broke some new ground, and hopefully not any drums. But the range of, if you look in any orchestration book, the range of the timpani is just about an octave, a little bit more. And we're more than two octaves in this piece, from almost to middle C all the way down to the very lowest note of the bassoon. So a very large range.
Wow. Well, I was going to ask you if you wanted to simply showcase what the timpani can do, because even though we hear the timpani in other pieces, it's in the back and it's sometimes color and accent. Or you wanted to extend what the timpani could do.
Well, I think extension was very much in my mind because the timpani in the orchestra, there's a traditional role in classical orchestral writing where they really double the trumpets and provide certain articulations at structural moments in the piece. Then it becomes more expressive as history goes on. And finally, with composers like Bartok, the timpani has a much more prominent melodic role. And I wanted to put it totally in the melodic camp for at least part of the piece. A lot of it is about drumming and refers to things the drums do well. But a lot of it is also about singing and melody, which is, I think, unusual for the timpani.
Could you talk in particular about the different movements? Because they each evoke different kinds of imagery. And what were you trying to do?
Well, sure. The first one is the slow movement. So we thought we'd begin the piece with the slow movement and a quiet movement. And the way that movement works, it's titled Leviathan. And my wife is certain it depicts a whale. But there's more to it than just the whale side of it. The idea, especially in the stories of sailors who are on ships of the sea, is the fear that even though the sea is calm and beautiful and the sun is shining, that down beneath them, there's some force that could rise up at any time and destroy them. In my view of the piece, I'm thinking of it less as a picture of a ship on a sea with a fish under it, and more of this as metaphor for our own emotional states, where we always have fears to confront and deep, dark things that are under. It also plays off the notion that the way the timpani's overtones are spaced, it really projects a note that's a little bit lower than is sounding at any one time. It's sort of an oral illusion with timpani sound. Second movement is totally different. It's a history lesson. It's about how the timpani came to Europe. And it turned out that it came in 1529 when the Turks first attacked Vienna. The timpani were battle instruments. The Turks brought them in. There was a pitched battle in Vienna. And the Turks were routed, they ran away and left behind two very important things for European culture. One were timpani and other percussion instruments, and also coffee, which came at the same time. You imagine Vienna without coffee or timpani, as you have to thank the Turks for having the nerve to try to take it over. The last movement kind of moves back from all of the didactic stuff of the second movement with its depictions, and is really much more just a celebration of drumming. You think of drums as dancing instruments. These are called singing drums because it's going to be a dance in which the drums always have a melody. So it has the more dance-like character of the three.
Well, I noticed, Don, you were very, very busy. And not just playing, but changing mallets and tuning.
Changing pitches, yeah.
So normally, during a normal performance of another piece where you're in the back, you're doing all those things. You're tuning, you're changing mallets. What is it like when you're right up front, both musically and visually? Is it logistically more complicated?
Well, there's the issue of when you're up front. I've played a few concertos before, the Kraft and Siegfried Matthus, but both those, I performed those kind of on a platform halfway back into the orchestra, really. It was really more of a sectional being with the percussion section in those concerto situations. But so being up front, I have played another concerto kind of close up front, the Bartok concerto for two pianos, two percussion. So that's up front. So when you're up front, it's a totally different situation with timing. You have to actually, and Yannick has been reminding me of this, just sit back in the time. Don't push like you are in the back. When you're in the back, you have to anticipate much more. There's a distance of sometimes 30 to 40 feet or more. The academy was like 60 feet. I mean, it was a football field away, but Kimmel is a little shallower, but there still isn't. You have to anticipate when you're in the back. And if you do that up front, you're going to beat the rest of the band to the punch, to the beat. And so I'm having to kind of still learn how to relax the time as a soloist. But it is really like big chamber music. You've got to feel time together, even in a big ensemble. And that's a sixth sense that everybody develops over time.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Susan.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.